The people of our country actually need a leader who engages in solutions, who actually addresses the problems at hand. But what we have in the former president is someone who would prefer to run on a problem instead of fixing a problem.
Why hasn't she done it? She's been there for 3.5 years. They've had 3.5 years to fix the border. She should leave right now, go down to that beautiful White House, go to the Capitol, get everyone together and do the things you want to do. But you haven't done it, and you won't do it.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the John Carlson Show, this Wednesday, September 11th edition of the radio program of record. Glad to have you here. And yes, we'll certainly take your phone calls about what you thought about the debates. Yes, there was the presidential debate between Donald Trump on the one hand and David Muir, Lindsay Davis, and I guess they tossed in Kamala Harris as well. So for 3-1, Trump did okay. But here's the bottom line. If Trump had been able to decisively win this debate, then we pretty much would have had everything set for the next 57 days. We would basically now be on our way to Donald Trump steadily heading toward victory. Didn't work out that way. He could have had a better night. I thought that ABC should never again be allowed to moderate a debate. It was so obvious that they were pulling for her, ignoring comments, outright lies she was telling, but then fact-checking Donald Trump on a whole series of things, even suggesting that when Trump said he was being sarcastic when he made a remark, one of the David Muir said, didn't appear sarcastic to me. I mean, it's just, you couldn't have been.
That's a fine interpretation, wasn't it?
More involved. It was good for him to not only fact check, but now they're giving their impressions.
Their opinion, basically.
So anyway, even given the bad refereeing, if you will, from the two ABC hosts. And again, I've never seen a host this far in the tank for one candidate. From not just the fact that Donald Trump was fact-checked, I think at least 5 or 6 times, she was not fact-checked even once when it was obvious that she should have been. And we'll get into that, you know, in a moment. But you will recall yesterday, I said, here's 3 things he needs to do, and here's 2 things he should not do. And the things he should not do, the big one he should not do, he did. He allowed her to bait him. I said that's going to be their number one goal, bait Donald Trump. He needs to rise above it. How many times did I say that yesterday? And he allowed himself to be baited several times, which changed the subject from what they were talking about. Anyway, I thought that Britt Hume put it well. He said, the moderators weren't fair, but Trump had a bad night. If he'd had a great night, then the Democrats would have said, we tried. It didn't work. Instead, she performed better than the very low expectations for her. Taylor Swift endorses her. We got her. Taylor Swift, by the way, has over, are you ready for this? Over 250 million followers on Twitter. I believe that's her following.
Somewhere around that.
Million.
Yeah.
That's around the world, but that's still a whole lot of voters. I don't know how many of them care about her politics.
But see, that's the thing, John. I kept saying about celebrities. When you're sure that, you know, you're a celebrity, you've got your whole audience. Now when you start showing political or religious decisions, some of those people are like, I didn't know. She's going to lose some.
Yeah, she will. Yeah, most definitely she will.
Happens all the time. We see it. We've seen it in our business.
But, you know, here's what it means. What it means is we're going to have a knockdown drag out all the way to November. So it was, you know, not a disastrous night for Donald Trump, but it would have been great if he could have put this election to bed early. And had he done so, had he been operating, you know, at a 10 out of 10, he could have, and there were opportunities where he could have nailed her on several things and didn't. It, you know, again, he was just not at his peak, at his prime. He still did a fine job, and he still did deliver on several things, which we'll get into. But first, let's get into Megyn Kelly, who has moderated presidential debates before, and her reaction to the ABC moderators.
I'm disgusted. I'm ashamed of those moderators at ABC News. They did exactly what their bosses wanted them to do. The person who runs ABC News is a close personal friend of Kamala Harris that is responsible for Kamala Harris and her husband meeting. And they did Dana Walden's bidding tonight. It was 3-1 on that debate stage this evening. Hi, everyone. I'm Megyn Kelly, a special program tonight for you reacting to the debate. It was 3-1. It's very easy to look like you know what you're doing when both moderators are entirely on your side. Trump did the best he could under the circumstances, but it really was like three fighters in the ring pummeling one opponent. And Trump tried to take them all on. He did fine. He did as best as he could. He was thrown a few times to the point where he was unnecessarily defensive and he was getting angry. And so was I. Were you? This was a mistake to trust ABC News with this debate. The Republicans must learn from this mistake. The same way the Democrats never, never agree to do anything with moderators they don't entirely trust. This should be the last time the Republicans ever do this, because those two moderators tried to sink Donald Trump tonight. The numerous fact checks on what he said and none on what she said. None. I don't remember a single fact check of anything she said, and she lied repeatedly.
And not only that, they weren't even clever lies. They were obvious lies. And they weren't called out. When she tried to say that Donald Trump wanted a national abortion ban. Well, that's not true. And it's clear it's not true. Trump has said he favors giving the issue to the states. But if he had made an incorrect assertion about Kamala Harris's position, the moderators would have jumped in and clarified, well, that's not her position, though, sir. They didn't do that with Trump. They tried to say that his campaign, or his plans for next year when he's elected president were really written by his people at Project 2025, which again is something that a think tank put together, completely outside the orbit of the Trump campaign. Trump has had nothing to do with it. We've talked about Project 2025. It's 900 pages. Some of the recommendations are great. Some of them are okay. A couple of them are silly. In 900 pages of recommendations, you're going to get, you know, some things you like, some things you don't. But the bottom line is, it's not his. It's clearly not his. It was a project that was inspired by the Heritage Foundation and dozens of other think tanks who said, you know, this should be the future of conservatism. Well, okay, they're certainly welcome to publish that. They've been publishing that for years at the Heritage Foundation. They call it Mandate for Leadership. That's not a Republican president's document. He is not the one who commissions it. They're doing it as a think tank to try and popularize what they, the think tank, wants. This is known. They're trying to tie Donald Trump to Project 2025 so they can find things in there that are particularly radical, usually at odds with what Trump wants to do, and say, ah, but that's Trump's agenda. It's not true. They know it. She said it anyway. And they didn't fact check her. Now, if they were going to take the view that we're not going to fact check these candidates because they get to fact check each other, fine. But when you fact check Donald Trump, I think it was 5 or 6 times, and you don't fact check her at all, something's wrong here. She repeated both sides had fine people. There were fine people on both sides, referring to neo-Nazis at Charlottesville. That has been debunked numerous times. There's no way that David Muir and Lindsay Davis could be even quasi-informed citizens, and network news people are supposed to be more than semi-informed. There's no way they could. There's no way that they could believe that that is true. It's been debunked too many times. It's an urban legend that was given life by Joe Biden telling that lie as the reason he got into reason he decided to run for president. And they let her get away with it. So that's why you have Megyn Kelly, who is so angry about that. Here's Fox News anchor Kevin Cork pointing out these discrepancies.
Critics, Trey, said that tonight's debate was overwhelmingly one-sided, thanks in large part to the live fact-checking of one of, but not both, of the candidates. For those of you keeping score at home, friend, now critics, Trey, said that tonight's debate was overwhelmingly one-sided, thanks in large part to the live fact-checking of one of, but not both, of the candidates. For those of you keeping score at home, fact-checks on Trump, 5. I counted 6, but we'll say 5. Harris, Bupkis, nothing. Now, there were several claims she made that were not fact-checked by ABC, like that police died on January 6th, didn't happen. Trump's bloodbath comment, totally taken out of context. Fine people on both sides, that was obviously debunked. How about Trump's support for Project 2025? The moderators had to know that wasn't true. To say nothing of Harris's claims on Trump's stance on IVF, they missed a chance on that. They also missed a chance to question her on her gun bans and mandatory buybacks. That Mr. Trump, she claimed, disparaged the military, and that no active U.S. military were in a combat zone. That, too, is not true.
And so, again, I don't mind them fact-checking Trump if they're being even-handed, if they're going both sides. Instead, like I said, it was more like a 3-on-1 debate. And no wonder Trump got very defensive and got very feisty and began taking the bait because he realized that the debate was out of control. All right, it's 18 minutes after 6 o'clock. No, I haven't forgot that this is Wednesday, and you know what happens on Wednesday, ladies and gentlemen. The legendary lyric contest continuing, as it does every Wednesday. I read you the lyric of a classic hit song. When you hear that song, be caller number 10 to 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. And name the band or the song, and some nice prizes coming your way, Mark Christopher.
Yeah, Daniel's Broiler, always a favorite. Danielsbroiler.com to reserve a table, place your takeout delivery order, reservations online in advance, USDA Prime Steak. This is a place to impress people if they've never been to Seattle before. This is an icon for locations. Bellevue, downtown Seattle, Leschi, South Lake Union. And we're not done with another icon of event. John, we got four more tickets for this. Okay, Elvis at the World's Fair, but still, we got a couple of rides from Seattle, now found at the State Fair, still in Puyallup. Only ride in 1900, a short horn bull that would tolerate kids on its back. We used to have hair pulling contest. 1920, you enter the fair with your baby. If it had a good look, it was pretty, curly hair or reddish hair, you won a prize. Schools used to close, John, one day every school year to let all the kids go to the fair. We've come a long way. The State Fair. Go to thefair.com, see what's left here for entertainment. The fun going on through the 22nd, Tuesday. We have a closure, of course, for maintenance. And just a reminder, too, that the fact that 165 acres, ample parking. Tribute bands are getting a lot of attention on one of these stages there, by the way. They got a tribute band for Jimmy Buffett, Taylor Swift. Also, we're seeing... who's the country artist that does the football theme song? Carrie Underwood.
Oh. Well, I was going to say Hank Williams Jr.
Yeah, but everybody's just blown away at these tribute bands that are showing up at one of the music stages there.
So you get a four-pack of tickets to the Western Washington Fair. Okay.
So much still to enjoy.
Here is your lyric. I've been searching for the daughter of the devil himself. I've been searching for an angel in white. One more time. I've been searching for the daughter of the devil himself. I've been searching for an angel in white. Where have you heard that lyric? It's from a hit song from a famous band, and we'll play it going in or out, coming back from a commercial break. When you hear it, be calling number 10, 206-421-5757. All right, a lot coming your way, including the incredibly, at the 7 o'clock hour, I'm going to explain why all of us seem a little frazzled. Our day started very, very interestingly here, the way it's never started before in all the years that I've done radio. We'll tell you about that at the top of the 7 o'clock hour, the commute with Carl. After 6 o'clock, Philip J. Vandervoort III. Look at that nice, fine lead-in to you. He's so fine, Philip J.
They weren't talking about me, I don't think.
The chiffons?
I doubt it. I highly doubt it.
Take the compliment.
I wasn't even born when they wrote that, sang that song. Okay. Let's get to the social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Okay, option for John here. Do you want to get into debate stuff, or do you want to get into September 11th memorial stuff?
Oh, my. Let's start with... We need to remember this day,
okay. Yeah,
September 11th.
United States Air Force posted on their social media, today we commemorate 23 years since the attacks of September 11th, 2001. It is our responsibility to remember the spirit of courage, resilience, and resolve demonstrated by ordinary citizens, first responders, service members, and international partners. I think that is a message that sums everything up quite nicely. The University of Utah. Used to be in the Pac-12. Now it's in the Big 12 Conference. They have ROTC students and a ROTC program at the University of Utah. And they posted video first thing this morning of ROTC students climbing 2,071 steps inside their football stadium, Rice-Eccles Stadium, to honor and remember those who lost their lives on September 11th. The ROTC students, some of them are in their fatigues. Some of them are carrying flags for the branch of military that they're in. And then some of them are carrying American flags as well. I thought that was a nice touch. That's one of the more personal touches that I've seen so far. And then the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, I think a lot of people are aware of that charity group that's helped so many people who were caught at Ground Zero in New York City and Washington, D.C. And the Tunnel to Towers Foundation wrote, "We remember the souls departed on September 11th and the thousands who have lost their lives to or are suffering from September 11th related illnesses. Mm-hmm. As the years pass, we continue to honor those who made the ultimate sacrifice and fought courageously on that day, September 11th, and in the global war on terrorism.
Just
never forget."
Just a little bit of context here, very important. If you are under 25 years of age.
Mm-hmm. I remember you mentioning something about this yesterday.
If you're under 25, you have no memory of 9/11. Mm-hmm. Something that is seared into all of our minds and hearts is something that to, you know, a 19-year-old today or a 14-year-old today is as distant as, say, Pearl Harbor was when we were growing up, going to school.
Yeah, I always thought about it in terms for me, born in 1969, about the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, where were you? I was out fishing Puget Sound that day, and I was like, where's the other boats? Hey, there's no airplanes flying.
No planes.
Space Needle today. Keep your eye on that for a memorable flag of tribute for 9/11.
I was doing afternoon radio at that time. I was I was in bed. And my wife woke me up, and we just started, like every other American that day, just started watching TV, and that's when we saw the second tower hit. So, yes, by all means. There's going to be a remembrance today, and it's going to be at the Scottish Rite Temple in Shoreline. And there's going to be military there. It's something that we deeply, deeply remember. Anyway, more details straight ahead. But Philip J., I'm sorry, did you have anything else for the social media sweep?
That was what I wanted to cover here to start.
I'm glad you did. Very good. We've got a lot more coming your way on The Commute with Carlson Talk Radio 570 KVI about the 3-on-1 presidential debate last night. There was also a governor's debate last night and a lot of other things going on in the news as well. An ad being launched by opponents of the four initiatives. Not arguing about the initiatives. Instead, they're attacking Brian Haywood, the man behind those initiatives. What's going on here? Well, we'll get into that as well. A busy morning, as you might expect, on The Commute with Carlson. Lindsay, Paul Revere and the Raiders?
A little patriotic dress band for the occasion here, John.
That's right. All right. By the way, that's not our legendary lyric of the day, is it? No.
No.
We got some nice prizes for you. 4-pack of tickets to the Puyallup Fair, the Washington State Fair, the Puyallup Fairgrounds. I'm going to be out there next Monday.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll be out there next Monday from noon till 2.
And the occasion why you're there on Monday?
It is Military Appreciation Day.
Another one already?
Yes. Yes, every Monday at the fair. Anyway, you get a 4-pack of tickets and a nice $50 gift card at Daniel's Broiler. Here is the lyric. Now, we're going to play this going in or out of commercial break. And when we do, you be the 10th caller to 206-421-5757. You do that, and you are the winner. Here's your lyric. I've been searching for the daughter of the devil himself. I've been searching for an angel in white. Have you figured it out yet, Mark Christopher? He knows he's heard this.
Still working on it. I got to sing it a few bars here.
I've been searching for the daughter of the devil himself. I've been searching for an angel in white. You think you know it? We'll be playing it. Okay. We're going to jump back to last night's debate, the presidential debate and the governor's debate a little bit later on. But first, I want to start with what might be a national scandal happening at the University of Washington. It is illegal to engage in race discrimination when hiring, or for that matter, admissions, at any state college or university. In June, a tape has surfaced from a University of Washington professor in the Department of Psychology alleging widespread discriminatory hiring at the University of Washington. The National Association of Scholars is publicizing these allegations. Quote, there has been a pattern, a long-standing pattern of illegal hiring in this university that was tacitly encouraged across the upper and central administration, said psychology professor Ione Fine, in a departmental meeting. A meeting where several deans of the UW were in attendance. She unpacked what the National Association of Scholars calls pointed allegations of university administrators violating non-discrimination law, avoiding accountability, and scapegoating the psychology department at the UW for actions that they had encouraged. The allegations revolve around an earlier scandal that we talked to you about last year when the university's own unit for investigating complaints found that a search committee re-ranked faculty job candidates on the basis of race. In its report, the compliance office detailed how the search committee, quote, inappropriately considered candidates' races when determining the order of offers, job offers, and they provided disparate opportunities for candidates based on their race. They were basically admitting that the university's DEI policies had stepped over the line of the law. The report described how the department's diversity advisory committee members were reluctant at ranking a white finalist ahead of a black finalist, even though the white finalist had better qualifications for the job. The diversity advisory committee prevailed, and the search committee switched its rankings, put the black candidate ahead of the white one. After releasing the report, the university required the psychology department to comply with a list of sanctions, including a 2-year tenure track hiring freeze. But Professor Fine's allegations, she looks to be a woman in her 30s or 40s, were giving new light to the scandal, holding that several university administrators were aware of discriminatory hiring happening at the UW. Her speech argued that the psychology department's re-ranking was explicitly encouraged by the association, by the associate vice provost for faculty advancement. His name is Chadwick Allen. In her remarks, she accused him of bullying junior faculty members on the search committee into re-ranking the candidates. Other administrators, she alleged, took actions to cover up the university's involvement. Directly addressing the dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, Professor Fine, this is a gutsy lady out there. Professor Fine stated, "Dean Harris, you deliberately manipulated the investigation with the goal of scapegoating the department in order to hide the involvement of upper administration. This strategy was endorsed at the highest levels, including the Board of Regents," close quote. Keep in mind, we're not just talking about something being unfair or unethical. It's illegal. Under I-200, it is illegal. Having initially blown the whistle on her own department, Professor Fine claimed that the university's investigation only began after it received a public records request regarding the search for the new faculty member. So if she is correct, the UW leadership scapegoated the psychology department for what its leaders at the highest ranks wanted, even reaching into the Board of Regents. So things are not all well at the UW. I will tell you, I am not surprised to see this happening out there. I have known for... No, I haven't known. I have suspected that the UW has been playing games with faculty and advancement for a long time. Again, this is the DEI ideology requires you to treat people differently because of what they look like, while the bedrock principles of civil rights require that you not judge people differently because of their race or their ethnicity or their religion. So, one more reason why DEI does not need to be changed, modified, tweaked. It needs to be done away with. It's fundamentally at odds with civil rights and personal liberty. It's 6:47. I wonder what our good friend Lars Larson, our Noon to Three host, thought about last night's presidential debate. We'll ask him. Un momento on the commute with Carlson. Great having you with us this Wednesday, 11th day of September. Well, I wonder what our Noon to Three host, Lars Larson, thought about last night's debate. Go ahead, give us a preview of what people are going to hear Noon to Three, Lars Larson.
Should have walked out there smiling and comfortable. He didn't. And I can list the flaws on Trump's side, even though I think Trump is still the better candidate. But I think there are people saying it's lack of preparation. I think he walked out there feeling like the embattled candidate that he is. And instead of saying, don't let the other side see a sweat, you know, my dad was in the Navy, he'd say, don't let them see a sweat on your first cruise. Well, this isn't his first cruise, and he should have walked out there smiling and confident. He looked grim and prepared, like, I'm going to do battle. And he did. Mm-hmm. It was a three-on-one match. The moderators fact-checked Trump over and over, and in many cases, falsely fact-checking him. And I'll point those out on today's show.
Yes. Yes.
But falsely, and what, the worst lie was this Lindsay Davis, who's apparently got friends in the Democrat Party, one of the two moderators, the young lady, she falsely fact-checked And she just threw it in, just as an, there is no place in America where you can kill a living baby. That is factually untrue. And in fact, in Tim Walz, Minnesota, during his tenure, one of his state agencies reports that at least six babies born alive, you know, after an abortion, but inadvertently left alive by the view of the doctor and the patient, were set aside to die. I mean, one of the most cruel things you can imagine, take a human baby.
The law,
that happened.
The law in Minnesota required that if a baby was accidentally born during an abortion,
yep,
if you will, a botched abortion, and the baby is living, you had to exhaust all possible methods and ways of keeping that baby alive, keeping the infant alive.
And yet they did not.
In Minnesota, they changed
Tim Walz's own agencies.
In Minnesota, they changed the law to do away with that requirement.
Yep. And by the way, the Democrats are full in on this. And so I think Trump also took the bait. She chummed the waters with attacks on the size of his rallies and whether or not he's popular. It was dumb for him to jump into that. He should have just smiled and said, there you go, and gone on to, refute the false points she made.
That's one of the things that I said yesterday. I said, don't fall for any of the bait that they're going to be laying down for you, because they're going to be laying down a lot of bait. And you are correct about that, Lars Larson. Absolutely. Hour number two of The Commute, straight ahead. Who's ready for hour number two of The Commute with Carlson? Thank you very much for joining me this 11th day of September, Wednesday edition of the radio program of record, 23rd anniversary, of course, of the dreadful attack on this country. 9/11 changed American politics. And in some ways, that struggle is still going on. Hezbollah to the north of Israel, the Houthi rebels in Yemen, Hamas in Gaza to the southwest of Israel, Boko Haram in Africa, which is slaughtering Catholic priests and killing Catholic parishioners. ISIS, which is still a reality, the Islamic State, that threat of Islamic jihad continues. It's continuing in Europe, it's continuing in Africa, it's continuing all over much of the world. And, perseverance is what it's going to take to beat back that beast, which continues to service, funded in many cases by the nation of Iran, which, you hear about, our major threat is coming from Vladimir Putin. No, I mean, if you're Ukrainian or if you're Polish, you're from Moldova, yeah, your major threat is Putin. Our major threat is China. Well, on the economic front, yes. Cyber espionage, certainly. Aggression in the South China Sea, definitely. But if you want to know the real threat to peace and stability in the world, it's Iran. They are injecting economic underwriting into some of the worst terrorists and following one of the most dangerous and awful causes, Islamic Jihad, that has surfaced since the end of the Cold War. So, there's that. but we've got a lot of other things we're talking about on The Commute with Carlson, including the fact that today's Wednesday, so our legendary lyric contest is underway. Going to read you a lyric from a hit song, and we're going to be playing it within the next 90 minutes, maybe even much sooner than 90 minutes. When you hear this lyric, give us a call at 206-421-5757. If you are caller number 10 and you can name the artist or the song, then you get some nice prizes. Isn't that right, Radio Legend Mark
Daniels
Christopher?
Daniels Broiler, icon of Seattle in the Northwest. You want to impress friends or impress yourself, a reminder of great things here in the area.
Yes.
Daniels Broiler, four locations, USDA Prime Steak, specialties with the chicken, and, of course, all the seafood here. Bellevue, downtown Seattle, Les Shy South Union, Lake Union there. And we also have four tickets for you. Still time for the Washington State Fair there in Puyallup up till the 22nd here. Lots to enjoy. Win these four tickets, Mom and Dad. Under five are free. See how that works there? Thefair.com. Check on the entertainment. Check on daily specials. Remember, Tuesday, they are closed. Otherwise, these are good, John, any day of the week now through the 22nd.
So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. All right? Okay. With that said, your lyric is... I've been searching for the daughter of the devil himself. I've been searching for an angel in white. Philip J. Vandervoort III, do you spot that lyric?
You know what? Now that I finally heard it, actually, I can't. I got tipped off by listeners earlier who were calling. But you have to wait. This is how the contest works. You don't call when you hear John say the lyrics. You have to call when you hear those lyrics in a song. Just remember that, everybody. That's how the game works.
Going into commercial break or coming back again, I've been searching for the daughter of the devil himself. I've been searching for an angel in white.
Do re mi fa sol la. Okay. I've been searching. I got it.
You think you got it? It took a while. All right.
I hit a note there. Okay, this will be a good one.
All right. Welcome back to The Commute with Carlson. Looking at last night's debate, the downside is that it was a missed opportunity. If Donald Trump had had batted 1,000, you know, if Donald Trump had had a command performance, then this would have been the beginning of the end of the Democrats' campaign to cling to power. Instead, Donald Trump found himself up against not only Kamala Harris, it really was Donald Trump versus Kamala Harris and Lindsay Davis from ABC News, and especially David Muir from ABC News. I've never seen moderators who are less moderate. Okay, they're just supposed to be directing the flow of the discussion. Instead, they were repeatedly fact-checking Trump, which would be fine if they were even-handed, but they weren't. They didn't fact-check Kamala Harris at all. They seemed to be doing whatever they could to help her. Plus, some of the things they chose to talk about were not things that your average American are tuning into a debate to hear about, but they were things that were designed to bait Trump. Anyway, here is some of the reaction. Britt Hume from Fox News, who's seen many, many, many debates in a more than half century career on Capitol Hill.
Well, I thought the single question that needed to be answered tonight was, Madam Vice President, why have you changed your position? Give us your thoughts on why you changed position, not just on the small handful of issues that were raised by the moderators, but on a range of other issues. There were like two questions on the whole thing all evening. She never had to account for her changes. Never.
Now, think about that. Number one, she wasn't asked to account for the record of the Biden-Harris administration, even though she is a continuation of the Biden-Harris administration. And because she's even more radical than Biden, she has switched her positions on several issues, and she was never really called to account for that.
She said she'd go down the list. She never really...
She never did. Now, look, make no mistake about it. Trump had a bad night. He rose to the bait repeatedly when she baited him, something I'm sure his advisors had begged him not to do. You know, in the first debate when Biden attacked him, he just kept his cool and kept going. In this debate, he rose to the bait, and we heard so many of the old grievances that we'd long thought that Trump had learned were not winners politically. Mm-hmm. And there they all were, you know, talking about how he didn't lose the election and all that. I mean, so my sense is that she came out of this in pretty good shape. Now, how long this will last is anybody's guess.
Okay, here's what it means. It means if Trump would have had a great night, then that would have been the end of this campaign. The momentum that she had enjoyed after Joe Biden left the race, that was just the euphoria of, thank God he's gone. From Democrats. And then the coronation at the convention, the afterglow had faded and her bump in the polls was already disappearing. And Trump was actually pulling ahead in the latest New York Times Siena poll. And if he had a really great night last night, then I think the momentum would have continued. So what's going to happen as a result of last night's debate? She'll probably get another small bump. And we'll see if they debate again. I'm guessing it is unlikely.
Fox News has put out letters. Harris says she's in. Trump, no comment.
Well, if she will do a debate on Fox News, that would be great. I will tell you this. I think the Fox News team will go out of its way to be fair and even-handed because of its reputation for being conservative. They want to show that they—think Bret Baier. He's going to be, you know, very
Martha McCallum has
neutral.
Done that in the past, yeah. Along with Bret Baier.
Mm-hmm. But— we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. It's going to be, I think, a nail biter now until November.
Do you think, John, with all your history of debates, running for governor, candidates, mm-hmm. campaigns, if we get back to a debate with live audience, keep the mics on, do a debate like it was originally planned and set up all through the years, would we have seen a difference last night? And do you think it would help if we get another debate to have the old rules come back?
Well, I think when you have an audience, basically you have people in the crowd trying to influence the answers candidates give by either booing, heckling, or cheering. So I understand why there were no people. On the other hand, when the mics are open, then there's just going to be back and forth interrupting. So, you know, what would really be nice is if we just got back to debates the old way, where there was just more respect for decorum and, frankly, more good manners.
Yeah, like, yes, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Ms. Chairman. You know, here's the question. Candidate one, candidate two. All right, next question, and just keep it rolling.
Yeah, but what really has to change is the unfair moderation of these debates. CNN showed CNN was the host of the Biden Trump debate, and Dana Bash and Jake Tapper are no fans of Donald Trump. But they were, for the most part, neutral and fair. They were tough on both candidates. There was a single standard for how measuring, you know, how they did their job. And, you know, that's because it's not hard to be fair. When you're being unfair, you're kind of going out of your way to be unfair. And that's what Lindsay Davis and David Muir from ABC were doing last night. Listen to this. Here is the vice presidential candidate for Kamala Harris, Tim Walz, praising the moderators for how well they did their job.
So, again, I appreciate the moderators calling him out on this, re-questioning him on it, making it clear that he's not lost. But look, this guy is a threat. This is going to be a close election. We know it comes down to the battleground states.
Okay, again, so there's Tim Walz. I really appreciate it. Yeah, I got to thank the moderators here. Here's Nicole Wallace, uber liberal, used to be a Republican. And then realized the water is much warmer at MSNBC when you're a liberal, praising the job the moderators did.
David Muir didn't hesitate to say, I went back and watched the tape. You didn't sound sarcastic to me when you said I lost by a whisker. Kamala Harris got Trump on three sides of whether or not he won in 2020. He said I won, and then he said, I said sarcastically that I lost by a whisker, and then David Muir ended it by saying, no, that wasn't sarcastic. So what the American people heard was Trump on three sides of the outcome of 2020, and David Muir and Lindsay Davis played an important role in that.
Yeah, they sure did. But look what she's acknowledging. David Muir helped her with the topic, helped her with the issue. And so, you know, it's just apparently at MSNBC, they don't even realize when they're acknowledging, yeah, the moderator stepped out to help her. And, you know, Trump said, well, when I made that comment, I was being sarcastic. And David, okay, you could just leave that for anyone to speculate on. Instead, you have David Muir say, well, I didn't appear that way to me. Understand, this is after they weren't fact-checking Kamala Harris, who was brazenly lying, repeating lies that have assertions that have been debunked and exposed as lies. The nonsense about Trump saying there were good people on both sides, meaning good neo-Nazis. No, he never said that. He said precisely the opposite. They could have called her out on that, pretended like they didn't notice a thing. Her attempt to say that the Donald Trump campaign is responsible for the Project 2025, that's been debunked as completely, wholly made up. They let it slide. Project 2025 is the work product of an independent think tank, not the Trump campaign. It was not commissioned by Donald Trump. It is something the Heritage Foundation, it was kind of a larger version of what they do every 4 years. They put together something called Mandate for Leadership. They've been doing it since the Reagan era. They've been doing it Democrat administrations, Republican administrations, et cetera, et cetera. He has no connection to it. They know. David Muir and Lindsay Davis, they know this. They let it go anyway. The whole falsehood that began with Tim Walz about the Trump administration opposing IVF, that is blatantly, brazenly untrue. That's been exposed. And when she brought that up, they could have flagged her for it. Nope. Let her get away with it. Her assertion that, keep in mind, Donald Trump has said that if he loses, there will be a bloodbath. That remark referred not to violence in the streets. He was referring to the supply of energy. If you trust these people with the future of energy, for heaven's sakes, there'll be a bloodbath. Again, that has been exposed as being taken radically out of context. They let her get away with that, too. So that's why it was 3-on-1. Maybe that was why Trump began to get angry and ever more defensive. And so that is why she survived the debate. So we'll see what happens if there is another one.
Yeah, I remember 2 weeks ago you were mentioning that Donald Trump said, if I go to ABC and do a debate, it's going to be a tough night. So he knew it was going to be a
He said
a
they
mess.
Were going to be unfair, and boy, he was more correct than he meant to be. 22 minutes after 7, Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with a social media sweep as the Commute with Carlson continues. Talk Radio 570 KBI.
I'm sorry, guys. I started singing this after an hour and a half hanging around this station.
You know, this is from the movie The Poseidon Adventure. Do you guys remember who the captain of the ship that was turned upside down in this movie, this thriller was?
I do, yeah.
Captain Meryl Steubing.
Leslie Nielsen.
Exactly. Oh, no kidding. Okay.
That was one of the last of his straight roles
before he became
a comic actor.
I just can't help but think someone at the Trump campaign is probably playing this song this morning.
All right.
After what happened last night. Oh, man.
So what's going on in the social media
Taylor
world?
Swift. Let me get in an answer about Taylor Swift here, the social media sweep. Sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. The social media is going crazy about, hey, Taylor Swift is off the sideline. She's endorsing Kamala Harris. Knock me over with a feather. Did we really think that Taylor Swift wasn't at some point going to say, yeah, I'll vote for her? I mean, here's the way.
For crying out loud, she was going to endorse Biden.
Here's what's hilarious about this.
Okay.
So Taylor Swift is one of the richest entertainers, if not the foremost richest entertainer going right now. She's siding with Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. And the opportunity for Trump here is, that's probably a smart move for her. But I'm the one that's here trying to work and help and lead for working class people. Meanwhile, Kamala Harris is doing backflips because Taylor Swift, who's living the life of luxury, who only pals around, it looks like, with other incredibly rich people. I don't see Taylor Swift dating people who are, working blue collar type jobs or things like that. She's always dating other entertainers, other people inside the Hollywood circle. And now she's dating Travis Kelce. Right. And that's all that compounds all the attention that she gets.
Very much the glitterati.
Exactly.
Elite.
Yeah. She's the elite of the elite. Not surprising that she's going to go with Kamala Harris.
Everyone wants Taylor Swift at her party.
Yeah, and all Donald Trump has to say is that's great. But there are a lot of voiceless people out here who have no voice. I'm the one that's going to try and stand up for them. But
37
we'll see how that goes.
Celebrities were going to leave this country if Trump got elected president time.
We can still hope.
Nobody ever left. Barbara Streisand.
Bold
Cher,
decision,
Miley
Taylor.
Cyrus.
Really bold decision. A couple other notes about the debate last night. Kristi Noem, South Dakota governor, pointed out, after the debate, we still don't know who Kamala Harris is, what she would do, what she wouldn't do. And, of course, the continuing question, if she's for all these things, how come she can't or won't do them as vice president? Pramila Jayapal hit on something Trump pointed out last night when Trump talked about prosecutions based on the rioting and the chaos in Minneapolis, part of the Black Lives Matter, George Floyd stuff. And then Trump mentioned Seattle. Pramila Jayapal, congresswoman from Seattle, pointed out on her social media, Trump knows nothing about Seattle or much else for that matter. Keep the name of my beautiful city out of your mouth. So she's playing the Will Smith, Chris Rock card there, I guess. And then Pramila Jayapal says something that's just absolutely puzzling, but is not at all surprising.
Yes.
She wrote, we have one of the highest minimum wages. I guess she means the state of Washington, or maybe Seattle is what she means specifically. We have one of the strongest economies of cities across the country. Well, you may want to pump the brakes on that one, Congresswoman. Washington as a state is 47th in the nation in unemployment. The only states that have higher unemployment than Washington at 4.9% are California, Illinois, and Nevada. So that's a bad flex to try and say that, hey, Seattle's got a great economy, Washington's got a great economy because we have a high minimum wage. That's kind of what the kids like today call a self-own.
Yeah, well, the other thing is we also have among the highest rates of fentanyl death.
Mm-hmm. That's not changing much.
I wonder how that fentanyl got here, Pramila Jayapal. We're a sanctuary city for illegals, and we're on the I-5 corridor. Well, geez, put those two things together. What do you get? More fentanyl. It is coming up here on 31 Minutes After 7. Somebody else being attacked with political ads, but it's not a candidate for public office. I'll tell you who it is coming right up. Our legendary lyric today. We're going to hear it sometime in the next 45 minutes or so. Your legendary lyric, which, when you hear it going in or out of commercial break, be caller number 10 to 206-421-5757. Got a four-pack of tickets to the Washington State Fair in Puyallup, formerly known as the Puyallup Fair, and we've got the $50 gift card to all to Daniel's Broiler Steakhouse, all four of their locations accepting that. All right, here we go. I've been searching for the daughter of the devil himself. I've been searching for an angel in white. Where have you heard that song before? You will hear it. Okay. There's an ad that has just been released. It's out there attacking someone. A political ad that's attacking someone, but it's not a candidate. It is an ad that is attacking Brian Haywood, the guy behind all four of the initiatives that are in front of us. That would be the initiative to repeal the tax on capital gains, which was giving you an idea of how utterly politicized our Supreme Court is, was defined as an excise tax when it is clearly a tax on the income derived from investments. In 49 other states, they refer to the capital gains tax as an income tax. In Washington, they call it an excise tax in order to keep from striking it down as unconstitutional. So the voters, the judges, the Supreme Court wouldn't strike it down. The voters can strike it down. Then there's the initiative to strike down the long-term care mandate that you have to belong to the state's long-term care program. That would make the program optional. Opponents say, you can't do that. Hardly anyone will want to belong to it, and the program will collapse. Well, that gives you an idea about how lousy the program is if everyone wants to leave it. And then there is the initiative to strike down the invisible gas tax, the carbon gas tax. And then there is the initiative to seize the power from government to decide whether you can have natural gas in your home or business or not and give it to people. I love this initiative because it not only just strikes down a bill that is trying to ban natural gas for consumers. It goes a step further and says government shouldn't even be making that decision. From now on, consumers will make that decision. Isn't that great? Anyway, there is a campaign group called Defend Washington, meaning defend high taxes, that are opposed to all four initiatives. And they are not making the case against the initiatives. They're asking you to vote against them because you should hate Brian Haywood.
There are a lot of misleading initiatives on the ballot this year, and all of them were put there by this guy, a millionaire hedge fund manager who moved here from California. What do the initiatives do? Make critical cuts to education and healthcare programs and put our air and water at risk just to give tax breaks to super rich guys like him. So that's deep cuts for us and tax cuts for him and his friends. Don't let some hedge fund millionaire control our future. Vote no on all the statewide initiatives on your ballot.
Okay, this entire initiative is a lie. This entire initiative ad is a lie. Let's begin with the first part of it.
There are a lot of misleading initiatives on the ballot this year, and all of them were put there by this guy, a millionaire hedge fund manager who moved here from California.
Okay, Brian Haywood didn't put anything on the ballot. The voters of Washington State put those initiatives on the ballot. The voters of Washington State. They all qualified with far more signatures than were required by law. None of those initiatives was a close call getting on the ballot. So the voters are the reason why you will be able to decide whether to repeal all of these taxes and regulations. As for Brian Haywood moving here, Brian Haywood moved here years ago. And again, they're just playing on negative stereotypes. And look how quickly they go to ad hominem attacks. Democrats have zero reluctance to go after people personally, to personally attack them. Brian Haywood is not going to make a dime from any of these initiatives. In fact, they're costing him millions of dollars. I guess you could make the case that when Initiative 2117 to reduce to do away with the Inslee carbon tax on gasoline and home heating fuel, I guess he'll save 40 cents a gallon on gas, but it cost him a couple of million dollars to get this and, in fact, it cost him $6 million to get this and several of the other initiatives qualified with the signatures of millions, literally millions, over 2.5 million signatures from over 1.4 million individual signatories. That's about a quarter of the registered voters in Washington State signed one or more of these initiatives. Let's continue.
What do the initiatives do? Make critical cuts to education and healthcare programs.
No, they don't. They don't do that at all. These initiatives just began. These initiatives just went into effect. So how you can say, oh, they're making critical cuts to these vital programs? These programs have been around forever. We have a $4.5 billion surplus in the bank right now. So again, every word of this anti-initiative ad is a lie. Let's continue.
And put our air and water at risk just to give tax breaks to super rich guys like him. So that's deep cuts for us and tax cuts for him and his friends. Don't let some hedge fund millionaire control our future. Vote no on all the statewide initiatives on your ballot.
That gives you an idea of the tone. The again, fact-free content of the campaign against these initiatives. They're ad hominem because they can't win a debate over the issues. And Brian Haywood, again, is not making any money. He's not subject to capital gains tax. His investments are in other countries, and he sold his stake in the company he used to run. So this is what we can come to expect from these people.
Brian Haywood on social media pointed out that he watched last night's gubernatorial debate with Bob Ferguson and Dave Riker. And one
yes.
of the things Brian Haywood posted.
What'd he say?
He said, in relation to Bob Ferguson, remember that kid in elementary school that would snitch to the teacher if anyone got slightly out of line going to lunch?
Oh.
His inference is, That's Bob Ferguson.
He hasn't changed. That is so correct. That is so correct.
And, you know, I watched
and then he'd stand there and smirk when the kid got in trouble.
And I watched the debate last night, and the word, the single word that I came away from after hearing Bob, I've never heard Bob Ferguson talk for that much at one single time before.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The word is sanctimonious.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, is he sanctimonious. And for all his complaints about Trump, I mean, he does the exact same stuff Trump does when he's speaking. He just prattles on. And
we're going to be
just
running
a little irony
we've
there.
We've got some audio from last night's debate. Not the presidential debate. We've been playing audio from the presidential debate all morning long, and we still have a few more clips to go. But audio from the Reichert-Ferguson clash last night as well. There's some really good moments in that debate. No, you're absolutely right. Ferguson comes across exactly that way.
I mean,
as the annoying kid trying to be the teacher's pet who would tattle on other kids.
Stage critique, Reichert standing still, microphone, good position. Ferguson, what's the rocking?
I didn't notice that.
It was going on.
I thought Reichert did a good job by going without the jacket, without the tie. I thought the relaxed look was pretty solid. And then, of course, Bob Ferguson,
All right, it's 7:47, Boeing time on the John Carlson Show, all you machinists out there. 7:47 on the commute with Carlson. Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Congratulations, KVI listener Judy in Renton. You win the legendary lyric contest. Yes, that is one of these nights from the Eagles, released in June of 1975. So it's 49 years young. It was released on the album of the same name. This was the album that was the big breakthrough for the Eagles. They had three top 10 singles. One of them is this one, One of These Nights, hit number one. Another was Lion Eyes. And the third was Take It to the Limit. Now, here's something interesting. One of These Nights was sung by Don Henley. Lion Eyes was sung by Glenn Frey. Take It to the Limit, sung by Randy Meisner. Three vocalists, three top 10 tunes. Eagles had a lot of range. It was also the last album that featured the band's original lineup. Guitarist Bernie Leadon left the band because they thought it was moving more toward rock from country. Remember, they were country rock.
Urban Cowboy. They were on the soundtrack, yeah.
And he was replaced by some guy named Joe Walsh. You know, is that a familiar name to any of you?
He loves Seattle a lot, that Joe Walsh guy. First band to go over $100 for a concert ticket, arena-sized venue, the Eagles did it in 1994.
I saw them play in the Kingdome with Linda Ronstadt going in the back, way back there, way back when, file. All right, that's all the time we have now. When we come back, there was another debate last night, Dave Reichert versus Bob Ferguson. We got some audio of that and some more clips from the Trump debate, Trump-Harris debate last night as well. It's a busy morning on the John Carlson Show.
John, just one question before you get started here. And there's a lot to cover. It was a big night and so much more to go. So I get to work this morning, everybody, dark 30, and at the front door of our building, Lower Queen Anne, John Carlson, Phil's sitting on the cement wall, and we have a police officer and a cruiser, and you guys look like, did you run a red light? Did you walk across the street and not look both ways? What was that all about?
We had a problem.
We had an intruder this morning in our building, apparently.
Basically, I was driving across the bridge in the middle of the night, and I get a phone call from one of the journalists working
one of our
at
newsroom.
Our sister station.
Newsroom co-workers.
And he said, I want to give you a heads up. There's an intruder in our building. Now, instantly I said, now that's odd, because I have to use my key fob not once, not twice, but 5 times.
To get to the studios.
To get into our studios.
To get into our studios, our portion of the office.
Yeah. Once to get into the parking, underground parking. Mm-hmm. I have to use the key fob again to get into the stairwell. I have to use the key fob again to get out of the stairwell to the bank of elevators.
Mm-hmm. Back and forth from the
restroom.
And
then you have to use the elevator, then use the key fob a fifth time to get into our studios. So we're pretty secure. And yet in the middle of the night, there was a man with a scarf covering his face who was trying to get into our studios.
Was in the hallway, so somehow ended up getting inside
was
the,
was
the building, but did not get into our offices.
Encountered by a female staffer, and she spooked him, threw him off his rhythm, whatever.
I can tell you this.
And he ran into the stairwell.
Whoever this intruder was certainly spooked our female coworker.
Yeah.
And
with good
understandably
reason.
So.
Okay, because every once in a while, someone goes hunting for someone in the news media they've developed a fixation on, whether it's just a personal fixation.
Right.
Or whether they don't like that person's voice or they don't like that person's politics.
And so far, we don't know if
whatever.
That's in any
night
way
after
connected
the,
to what happened this morning.
Here, yeah, Lower
but
Queen
yeah,
Anne.
The morning after the debate and all that.
And Lower Queen Anne is supposed to be a quiet area for a radio station.
And we had been assured that there's no way an unwelcome guest can get into our studios in the wee hours of the morning.
Right.
They can't get on the floor where our studios are located. And this is at least the second time an intruder has been up here. The first time it was a harmless guy.
And then we learned something from the police officer who responded to try and look around for the intruder that sometime early this morning, just a few blocks away from us, there was some sort of either robbery or burglary. I guess it would have been a burglary, an overnight break-in at a market not too far from here, maybe 4 blocks from here.
Mm-hmm.
It broke into a market on West Mercer Street as you go down towards Elliott Avenue. Broke in and stole whatever they could get their hands on, but one of the things the officer spoke about was cigarettes. So another property crime, along with the one on our property here first thing this morning in Lower Queen Anne.
So that could be it. But like I said, when someone is somewhere, there's no way he's supposed to be in the wee hours of the morning wearing a mask.
Yeah.
You usually get a little bit trepidation.
Yep. And not sure if it's connected, but I have noticed in the last 2 or 3 weeks that we have had tents on sidewalks within a block of our building. And those have sprung up that in spots that they have not been in the year and a half that we've been in this building.
All right.
Thank you, Seattle Police Department. Keeping it safe.
So, anyway, that's how we started our day today. Like I said, unlike any other day.
Certainly a first for us.
It is 7.5 minutes after 8 o'clock. You heard that soundbite about Donald Trump talking about illegals in the town of Springfield eating other people's pets.
Or reports of that.
That's what Trump referenced. And again, he was fact-checked on that by David Muir.
Based on what the city manager told ABC.
Yes. At 8:35, I will tell you what people who live
in Ohio,
in Springfield, portion. Ohio, which is about 45 minutes outside of Columbus, I'll tell you what they have to say about what's going on in their town. Suffice it to say, the city manager, of course, wants to put a smiley face on any news involving the city that he's responsible for running.
Ostensibly, yeah.
These people who live in Springfield don't quite see it the same way. So here you have Trump talking about what people are saying in Springfield. Yeah. Not what people are saying about Springfield, what people are saying in Springfield. And you have ABC News say, well, we talked to the city manager. So, and that's, you should be disabused of that. That's not in, they have no reports.
Social media is responding to this with resurrecting the old TV show Alf, saying that they've finally arrested the illegal alien, a space alien, Alf, for eating pets. Because that was one of the gags on the old Alf TV show, is that the Alf, the alien, would eat cats.
There was another debate last night. This one at the studios of King TV in Seattle, where I used to work. And I have participated in a King TV-hosted gubernatorial debate myself many, many years ago. This one was moderated by Joyce Taylor. And featured, of course, Bob Ferguson, three-term attorney general, up against Dave Reichert, who was King County Sheriff for two or three terms before being elected to seven terms in Congress. This debate was very lively. And we're going to look at a couple of bites here. This was Bob Ferguson being asked about the hidden gas tax that is now reclassified as the CCA, the Climate Commitment Act. Here's Bob Ferguson last night.
I believe that the Climate Commitment Act needs to be adjusted. Hmm. For example, farmers are entitled to an exemption under the Climate Commitment Act. That hasn't happened yet. When I'm elected governor, I've met with farmers in Odessa. We're going to make sure that the state follows through on the promise to make sure those farmers get the exemption they're entitled to.
Now, he is correct. The farmers were promised an exemption.
Inslee never delivered on that promise.
Well, the bill doesn't include the exemption. So basically, they were lied to. And they are very angry about this. And so Bob Ferguson said, we need some changes. We need some adjustments. Here is what Dave Reichert had to say about the Climate Commitment Act.
The problem with the gas tax is we weren't told the truth. We were lied to. We were told it was going to be pennies. It's more than pennies. It's gone up to 50 cents at some points. We're competing with California now to see who can have the highest gas tax. Now, when we do that, again, I'll go back to my previous statement. Everything that we buy goes up. Everything that's hauled in trucks, grown on farms. And here's what's bothersome. The voters did not have an opportunity to really voice their opinions in this case. So I say, let's vote yes, pay less, and then let's have a discussion with the members of our state legislature and find a way forward that's not placing the cost of a green, clean energy efforts on the backs of hardworking Washingtonians.
Okay, a very stout defense of Initiative 2117 to do away with the Climate Commitment Act. High gas prices was a big topic at last night's debate. Mark Hanrahan, he's from Spokane Station KREM. Here is the question that he asked that started the back and forth between Ferguson and Dave Reichert.
Do you think the public was misled about the CCA's impact on gas prices? And would you take any steps to reduce gas prices and bring them back in line with states like Oregon?
Yeah, it's time to move forward on what's going to happen move forward. And I talked earlier about making sure, for example, farmers get that exemption they're entitled to make sure they're not paying too much in gas prices. We need to make sure we're holding gas corporations accountable when they're not playing by the rules. I do want to add, though, that my opponent denies that humans even contribute to climate change. And you can go to ReichertRevealed.com. So he's interrupting me again.
Please,
but
please
you can go to ReichertRevealed.com, and you can actually listen to his words. There's audio tape of all these things. You also said, Dave, I love Donald Trump's policies. Well, guess what? Yeah. A lot of those policies eviscerated environmental laws, clean air, clean water. I know, Dave, because as Attorney General, I challenged those rulings in court and won saying all these things.
Mr. Reichert, the question centered around if you think Washingtonians were misled about the CCA's impact on gas prices, and what steps would you take, or would you take steps to reduce gas prices and bring them back in line with states like Oregon?
Well, first of all, you vote yes on the initiative, and yes, we were misled. And yes, the farmers and the truck drivers were misled. They were told they were going to have an exemption when no language included at all in that bill that allowed for an exemption. They've had to now sue the state of Washington to try and get that exemption. And as far as the Donald Trump policy, yes, I agree with some of Donald Trump's policies, and that is, guess what, lower taxes. Hard and tough on crime. Let's hold people accountable and responsible to the laws of Washington State. Let's stop blaming victims and excusing criminals. Yes, I agree with lower taxes. Yes, I agree with tough on crime. Yes, I agree with tougher on the borders and border security. We're allowing terrorists into our country.
Mr. Reichert, that's time. Thank you.
Okay. A good, clean division there. Now, Ferguson is definitely the more polished speaker. And I love how Brian Haywood described him in a tweet last night. He said he's like that kid in elementary school who tattles on other kids at lunchtime to curry favor with the teacher. Dave was more plain spoken, showed up in, you know, a collared shirt, and that was it, and, you know, Ferguson, the suit and tie. Here is what Dave needs to do to continue building momentum for his campaign. He has shown that there's a clear difference in where these two guys are coming from. And I think what he needs to do now is go the extra step of being specific about what exactly will change. Now, clearly, there will be literally a new sheriff in town and a new viewpoint, a new outlook, a new attitude toward crime in town. But tell people what that means. Tell people what that means. He pointed out several times last night that Bob Ferguson has called for the legalization of fentanyl, which is true. He called for removing criminal penalties on all hard drugs. He was dumb enough to do this in writing and on tape because he thought that that was the future. That was where the country was going, which shows you how out of touch Bob Ferguson is. But don't stop there. Point out that Ferguson wanted to legalize fentanyl, and Dave Reichert says, you know what? Too many people have died. It's time to make fentanyl a felony. Because 4 years ago, it would have been a felony to be caught with fentanyl. Making fentanyl a felony puts leverage on the side of society that if you don't want to incarcerate a lot of people who are using drugs and committing crime, then you want them in treatment, right? Well, there's your leverage. Making it a gross misdemeanor ain't going to cut it with a lot of them. Especially since the gross misdemeanor was watered down in the language of the bill. So that's just one example. What Dave Reichert should say, that is, make fentanyl a felony. Another thing he should do is he should say the juvenile justice system in Washington State is completely dysfunctional. And in the name of juvenile justice reform, King County has proliferated juvenile crime and encouraged more violence and more shootings. Obviously, that needs to be replaced. And tell them what your new policy would change. So I think that it's clear Dave Reichert represents a new attitude. Let's also show them the new ideas. Specifically, what will change in state law? What will change in state policy via his executive orders? That's what he needs to do to show here's one pathway with Bob Ferguson and what he's going to do, what he's called for in the past. Here's my path. And this is what will change as a result. Dave Reichert does that, and his momentum continues. That's got to be the next step. And this is the time to do it because everyone's now paying attention. All right, and they're going to have another debate. So I don't know if Harris and Trump will have another debate, but we know that Dave Reichert and Bob Ferguson will be having at least one more debate. Reichert wanted even more, and Ferguson was reluctant to do it, turn them down. So it is 20 minutes after 8. When we come back, Philip J. Vandenberg III's favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists. On the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Oh, with it, Philip J. Vandenberg III of the social media sweep, social media from socialists.
Okay, I'm going to get to the, well, you know what? Let's start it this way, I guess. We have some world-class virtue signaling from an ESPN host personality after last night's debate. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Mina Kimes is an ESPN co-host, host, sports pundit. And Mina Kimes wrote about the debate last night. In 20 years, history will not look kindly at the fact that it took 1.5 hours of a presidential debate to briefly get to climate change. Because that was one of the last subjects that came up last night between Trump and Vice President Harris.
Three words.
Mm-hmm.
Stick to sports.
Somebody commented, nobody will look back at this debate in 20 years. And then somebody said, yeah, but they've been, you know, politically complaining about the environment 20 years ago. And they were complaining about the environmental either fragility or imminent destruction 20 years before that 20 years. So, and I think that's a reasonable thing this comes up in a political situation a lot. Oh, yeah. The environment is in crisis and peril.
In the 80s, we were doomed because of the nuclear arms race.
How about the ozone layer?
And then in the 70s, we were doomed because the world was running out of oil.
Acid rain in the 70s, right?
In the 60s, we were doomed because population growth is completely out of control.
Mm-hmm, right?
And it's going to be widespread famine and war.
Unsustainable populations, right?
So this is now the fourth apocalyptic apocalyptic doomsday scenario that we keep hearing every few decades or so. There's another apocalyptic existential crisis on our hands that turns out to be nothing close of the kind.
Yeah. I almost forgot I had this one. The Los Angeles Times. Let me pull up their
They're still
post
publishing?
From yesterday.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if we want to call the LA Times socialist or not, but their politics, yes, but they are charging people to read articles so they understand capitalism to some extent.
No, they don't. They're going broke.
This one, yeah, that's true. They are struggling in the financial sense. This one's behind a paywall, but the Los Angeles Times Post says a lot of young people won't be voting for Kamala Harris unless she enacts a bold progressive agenda that includes having a ceasefire in Gaza, and that includes green jobs and investments in communities. So maybe the young vote will skip out. Although now that Taylor Swift has decided she wants Kamala Harris for president, maybe those young voters will come back despite not getting a ceasefire in Gaza because Hamas keeps refusing the numerous offers of ceasefire. And then because today is September 11th, a couple of items related to September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is New York lawmakers. I was trying to work this one in earlier and didn't have a chance to get it wedged in earlier. But lawmakers in the state of New York are pushing to make September 11th a federal holiday? And do you think that's necessary? Off the top of my head, I would be inclined to say, no, don't make it a federal holiday, because I would be nervous that we just turn this into a day off where we go all go do other stuff and we don't think about it, what it is for what it is, and the need to remember what happened on September 11th. And Representative Anthony D'Esposito from New York, he's a Republican, said the phrase "never forget" is common this time of year, but the bill he co-sponsored would make the sentiment real. He says people do forget, people are forgetting. And when you talk to children who are now graduating high school who weren't even alive on September 11th, unfortunately, in some curriculums throughout not just Long Island but the United States, they're not even teaching about September 11th.
Well, college students were not alive. If you're under 25, you don't have any memory of 9/11. Again, for every American under 25, they don't remember it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to do something. We do have to constantly remember moments in American history that have changed this country and threatened this country.
Where were you? Comes to mind.
Yeah, Kamala Harris invoked the worst attack on the U.S. democracy as January 6th since the Civil War. And she said
which was nonsense.
She said that the day before September 11th.
Yeah, the day before September 11th, we lose over 3,000 people.
Yeah, a little perspective.
Something Trump should have mentioned. Yeah. He said, funny you would say that the day before September 11th, before 9/11. It is coming up here, 8:30, The Commute with Carlson.
Quick mention, Seattle Fire Department, Seattle Police Department teaming up. Watch the flag on top of the Space Needle in remembrance and tribute
to this day.
Way to go, everybody.
Glad they are doing that. Glad they are doing that. You heard the soundbite about Donald Trump talking about a town where illegals are eating the pets of American residents. What on earth was he referring to? Because David Muir quickly said, we spoke with the city manager and there are no reports that this is happening. We're going to tell you what the people who live in this town, Springfield, Ohio, what they are saying about what's going on in their town that is being caused by a huge wave of immigrants. More on this right around the corner of The Commute with Carlson. Back on the John Carlson Show. So what was that whole thing about when Donald Trump made this reference to people eating, immigrants eating animals, other people's pets? And David Muir saying, we've spoken to the city manager of that town, and he says that there are no reports of that, as if that means it didn't happen. Okay, what's going on here? Here's what's going on. The town is Springfield, Ohio. It is a town of 58,000 people. It's about 45 minutes outside of Columbus, which is state capital and also the city where the Ohio State University is located. Back in June, the Biden-Harris administration allowed 300,000 Haitians to have temporary legal status because of all the turmoil going on in Haiti. And it is a basket case. It's virtually ungovernable right now. This temporary legal status would last until February 2026. And these Haitian migrants are allowed to remain and work in the country until then, and probably beyond, but at least until then. In this town of 58,000, 20,000 Haitian immigrants have moved. They have overwhelmed every city service that is available there, or state services with city offices in Springfield. And at a recent city council meeting, a lot of people showed up and they were venting and they weren't happy. Springfield resident Anthony Harris, 2 weeks ago, said at the city meeting that migrants are grabbing ducks from the park, killing them, and eating them. Quote, they're in the park, grabbing up ducks by their necks, cutting their heads off, and walking off with them and eating them, he said. Another resident described some of the Haitian immigrants as eating food inside grocery stores and stealing farm animals. She said they're opening containers in our grocery stores, helping themselves to what's inside and throwing the rest onto the shelves and floors, pulling off the highway to publicly clean and gut roadkill, lying there in front of anyone that passes, stealing animals from farmers and leaving their severed heads at the site of an old school where children play. This is insanity, and it has to stop. Another resident of Springfield, Ohio, said, I have a 20-year-old granddaughter who works two jobs, pays city tax and federal and state and other stuff. She works two jobs. She's pregnant. It took us 4 months to get Medicaid for that young lady. She couldn't have any of her tests done. We can't get through the doors of the Ohio Department of Family Services to do anything. The line is so long. And that's what we've done in our city. We've brought too many dadgum people to come in here and be able to apply for free stuff. And here we are working, paying taxes every week. For what? So my granddaughter can't get any help? Another resident, speaking for herself and her elderly husband, said they're thinking of moving. Quote, it's so unsafe in my neighborhood. I have men who can't speak English in my front yard screaming at me, throwing mattresses in my yard, throwing trash in the front yard. And look at me, I'm 95 pounds. I couldn't defend myself if I had to. I don't understand what you expect of us as citizens, the woman continued. I mean, I understand they're here under temporary protected status and you're protecting them, but all city services are overwhelmed and understaffed. So rising crime, dysfunction, culture clashes, city services overwhelmed, and last month, a Haitian immigrant driving with no driver's license crossed the dividing line in the center of the street, crashed into a school bus, 20 children taken to the hospital, an 11-year-old boy was killed. This is what is going on in this little town of 58,000 with 20,000 Haitian immigrants. Not only that, a New York Times report pointed out how Haitian immigrants who are, according to the Times, generally on government assistance are paying up to $3,000 a month in rent. So the government is giving them money to pay rent, which is pricing other residents who can't afford to pay that much rent out of their apartments. J.D. Vance tweeted out, months ago, I raised the issue of Haitian illegal immigrants draining social services and generally causing chaos all over Springfield, Ohio. So regarding the report about eating other people's pets, I don't know if that is hyperbole, but I know this much, that you're not going to hear from the city manager. He's not going to volunteer this information. It's very embarrassing to the city. He's the city manager. He's in charge of running the place. But I know from what these people are saying that Springfield is a mess. And it is caused directly by the policies of Biden-Harris. So that's the larger truth. And that needs to be told. People need to know this. Megyn Kelly, formerly with Fox News, who's moderated her share of presidential debates, was furious with how last night's debate was conducted.
I'm disgusted. I'm ashamed of those moderators at ABC News. They did exactly what their bosses wanted them to do. The person who runs ABC News is a close personal friend of Kamala Harris that is responsible for Kamala Harris and her husband meeting. And they did Dana Walden's bidding tonight. It was 3-1 on that debate stage this evening. Hi, everyone. I'm Megyn Kelly, a special program tonight for you reacting to the debate. It was 3-1. It's very easy to look like you know what you're doing when both moderators are entirely on your side. Trump did the best he could under the circumstances, but it really was like three fighters in the ring pummeling one opponent. And Trump tried to take them all on. He did fine. He did as best as he could. He was thrown a few times to the point where he was unnecessarily defensive and he was getting angry. And so was I. Were you? This was a mistake to trust ABC News with this debate. The Republicans must learn from this mistake. The same way the Democrats never, never agree to do anything with moderators they don't entirely trust. This should be the last time the Republicans ever do this, because those two moderators tried to sink Donald Trump tonight. The numerous fact checks on what he said and none on what she said. None. I don't remember a single fact check of anything she said, and she lied repeatedly.
Yep. Well said. One of our listeners pointed out, I had mentioned earlier, you know, in the CNN debate, you had two liberals who don't like Donald Trump, Dana Bash and Jake Tapper, but they were for the most part quite fair. That was the Trump-Biden debate. Richard, listening to us in Northern Virginia online. You can listen to us online as well at kvi.com. Just click on the Listen Live banner and you can get perfect reception just about anywhere in the world for the John Carlson Show. Anyway, Richard in Northern Virginia. CNN was fair to Trump because the goal was to get Biden out of the race. ABC was unfair to Trump because the goal is to elect Kamala Harris. You know, that actually makes sense. That actually makes sense. Bill in Redmond says, hey, let's face it, Trump blew it. Terrible speaker. If he can't handle those three clowns last night, how can he handle being the president? He came across as angry, somewhat unhinged. I'm more angry with him than ABC. So many missed opportunities. He could have calmly dismantled those three, but he's just not capable of it. Bill, that might be a little more difficult than you think. When the people who are supposed to be the umpires are helping the other team, if you're a player on that other team or the manager of that team, you're going to get hot pretty quick. You're going to get pretty angry. It's a little easier. It's much easier said than done to say, oh, he could have calmly dismantled those three. No, that wouldn't have been so easy. But Bill is correct that Trump had some opportunities that he missed. And here is the other thing. And I mentioned this yesterday when I said, here are the three things he must do and two things he cannot do. And he did one of the things you cannot do. Do not lose your composure. Do not let her bait you. And she clearly was doing that. She was lying about Trump because she knew that it would bait him. And furthermore, she knew that the moderators weren't going to call her on it. Do we have that clip? Let's see. Here we go. Yeah, here we go. Here is Kamala Harris's line that really got Trump angry.
And I'm going to actually do something really unusual, and I'm going to invite you to attend one of Donald Trump's rallies, because it's a really interesting thing to watch. You will see during the course of his rallies, he talks about fictional characters like Hannibal Lecter. He will talk about windmills cause cancer. And what you will also notice is that people start leaving his rallies early out of exhaustion and boredom. And I will tell you, the one thing you will not hear him talk about is you. You will not hear him talk about your needs, your dreams, and your desires.
Okay. Trump instantly started defending his rallies and the size of the crowds that show up for his rallies. And then he goes after and says, my rallies are bigger than your rallies. You have to bus your people in, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm going, no, 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 she did it again. Get back on your game.
And that would have been an easy spot where he could have said, yeah, you'll help them, just not while you're vice president. Your inability to do it now, or your unwillingness to do it now, you keep telling everyone you have to wait until you're elected to do it. You just can't do it now. They have to wait. But that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah. But when we come back, I'll play you the best moment of the debate for Trump. Coming right up on The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Here was Donald Trump's best moment of the debate last night.
So she just started by saying she's going to do this, she's going to do that, she's going to do all these wonderful things. Why hasn't she done it? She's been there for 3.5 years. They've had 3.5 years to fix the border. They've had 3.5 years to create jobs and all the things we talked about. Why hasn't she done it? She should leave right now, go down to that beautiful White House, go to the Capitol, get everyone together and do the things you want to do, but you haven't done it and you won't do it because you believe in things that the American people don't believe in. You believe in things like, we're not going to frack, we're not going to take fossil fuel, we're not going to do.
All right, that's it.